But anyways, we continue to work on the Jason Hoover film, and we're going to be reshooting some scenes this year. So stay tuned for that. We have not given up. It's just making a film is a very involved process, shall we say.
Oh, you know, you do something, you do it right. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. We've got an awesome selection tonight on African Rhythms of jazz, soul, and Latin. And we like to go into some of those parts. Northern soul, of course. We're going to get into some of that. Jazz fusion. In fact, Dee Dee Bridgewater, special guest on this inner city Charles Sullivan 1976 album. And I think this is a track you're going to enjoy.
I believe so.
All right. Well, let's set it off.
Thank you.
I think subtlety would be what would describe that track. Mm-hmm. And basically, although she's got all of this power to go lower or higher, she just sort of subtly inflects. Like, mm-hmm. it's not some, she's not like showing off or yep. dancing the ultimate dance, but she's just doing what the track needs. Dee Dee Bridgewater.
Look how long yep. she's been in business. Everybody yep. knows she knows her stuff. When you mm-hmm. get that kind of performance from someone, they had that kind of ethic and instrument, you're always going to be in demand.
Yeah. CITR 101.9 FM, and that is some major talent from 77, completely overlooked.
They say in real estate, the number one rule is location, location, location. This is a perfect example of that. This band was based out of Columbus, Ohio, which for those here, that's the home base of Ohio State University. So you could see these cats getting played on a college station, but further down the road in Dayton, Ohio. If they had been picked up there, David, given the time frame, they would have been right at home with the Ohio Players, Heat Wave, Sun, Lakeside. They would have all been in there. They would have gotten a fair shot. Sometimes you just miss because of where you are.
I just find it uncanny, though, you know, that something that it's got keyboard lines and lyrical qualities like Stevie, mm-hmm. but why were people not still enjoying stuff like that? Like, why was there such a push onto the disco or whatever,
in 77? Yeah, the timing of it was everything, because if that had been in Dayton, Ohio, it would have gotten a push, because they saw the success that the Ohio Players had in spite of that and all the funk bands from that area, so they would have gotten a fair shot.
Yeah, I mean, mean, that was the year of, I guess, Songs in the Key of Life.
Songs in the Key of Life, yeah. Fire.
Yeah.
Skin Tight was the year before. I mean, there was a strong contingent of funk there that was still emanating from that area. So obviously we, had they had the opportunity, they would have probably fit in like Faizo did when the Ohio Players picked them up and things like that. You would have had somebody looking out for you because you were from the same area.
Yeah, it's astounding today how, but, you know, justified, you know, that these artists are getting heard. I mean, I remember back in the 90s where we were uncovering all kinds of stuff, but there's still more, brother. There's still more.
Yeah, and that's why you can't look at anybody's effort in this kind of music as a failure, because it is all about who got a hold of it, who played it, what are the politics were behind it that stopped it from getting the attention that it deserved. You know, it's a funky business, but obviously something like this wouldn't have lasted as long or has been as great a product if somebody didn't believe in it from Jump Street. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, the next track that we're going to listen to is The Family Affair, I Had a Friend, you know, which you played on the show before. But, you know, is this perfect or not for terrible things that are going on right now locally? You know, just people are dropping dead by the truckload, literally, like from the what's going on in our local communities. So you talk about a track that dealt with some deep stuff. Here is one, and you remember this one from back in the day.
I can remember this. WWRL 1600 in New York AM used to do 30-second spots on Let the Junkie Bust the Pusher and constant reminders of what drugs was doing to the community. And this is reflective of this because you had the strong Latin and R&B funk influence from that day. And there were only a couple of stations that were playing this. And the fact that it was an independent station pushing this through in spite of what ABC and all the major stations was doing was a tribute to the DJs and the program directors there having the foresight to play it.
And it shows you just how deep and thinking Latin music was. And that being in the mix in New York, it probably wouldn't have been the same in Chicago or Detroit or other places.
Excellent point. You know? That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's check this track out because this is really deep. You're listening to African Rhythms. Mike and Dave reunited in 2017. Incredibly profound lyrics, so we got to check it out one more time.
My friend died from an overdose.
Wow.
Wow.
soul music be the food of love, then we want a second helping. This is CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
That is one of Mike and David's favorites from the classic Mike and David 90s era. Not that there's anything wrong with the modern era, but, you know, that was like the classic 90s era. Luckily, if you go on Mixcloud, you can find a few of those shows. David Love Jones is my Mixcloud, but also you can find a whole bunch up here at CITR.ca. And then, of course, you can find the African Rhythms Radio like page on Facebook if you want to get little updates here and there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Sam Dee's, wow, like the backup vocalists. It's weird how when something's done right and when, you know, you're such a good songwriter and vocalist that even something like an incredible backup vocalist the right way adds even another dimension to a song.
It reminds the vocalist that they have to always come in with their A game. Here's somebody that knows not only their parts, but everybody else's part as well. And even though he hasn't done any of that multi-track stuff, a.k.a. Marvin Gaye or anybody else, he has the ability to do so because he has a superior ear.
Yeah. But, you know, the neat thing is that in that song, he actually, like, just like with instruments, he let the backup vocals take a solo a little bit because she actually makes a unique kind of vamp on the vocals. So that's not always, you know, backup vocals don't always get even to shine right. like that, you
that's
know.
Right.
Sometimes they're just backup, you know.
Yeah, well, we were speaking on that with Dee Dee Bridgewater earlier. This is somebody who's very comfortable with his instrument and understands every aspect of it because he can allow for that to happen. He's not ego-driven as some other lead singers can be by the moment and thinking, okay, this is all about me. He understands that everything else in the background has to flow and you get the results.
We talk about tracks you brought to the radio show back in the 90s, and I remember you coming back from New York with your 45s, and I believe I'm just an average guy. Masqueraders was Ooh. One of those.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Hot stuff. You know, sometimes you'll have those cats to do the one-take thing, and the studio situation may not be the best, so it'll sound a little grainy, and then you'll have the full orchestration of those. The chops on these guys show they can handle both of those. If you ever got into the Masqueraders discography, you'd see that there's a mix of both of those things, but it all came together well in this. You got the full-blown church effect of what these cats were singing. And everything.
So a relative of yours, this was actually the track played at?
At his funeral. At my cousin Elaine's funeral. Her husband, George, met her And because he was from the islands, he couldn't say man. You know, he said, if I were a rich man. But he loved the song, and he loved my cousin, and that was played in Memorial Tour. They were together.
So this has real family meaning to you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, yes.
All right, well, let's check this out, The Masqueraders.
Call it what you want. important conscious soul from the 70s, Syl Johnson.
Some pretty socially conscious 70s. Of course he did Is It Because I'm Black as well. But yeah, that was a little bit of an overlooked one, but got sampled into hip-hop, so brought it back around.
That's, you know, God bless hip-hop for being able to make sure that they have everything covered. You know, they talked about it being a fad, but going on 45 years, it's still alive and well, although there are some aspects I'm not crazy about.
No doubt.
The foundation was well laid.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm in the car over here. I was playing Blue for you, a modern hip-hop artist, and we were just saying, you know, that it can be done well, and it's fragmented into a number of things. But the underground conscious side will always be welcome to, for sure.
Song plethorous. As you stand in your glory. Yeah. As you stand in your glory. Yeah. When you get too old to fight, day turns night, hugging the light, humming like a bird does doves, etc. Love song plethorous. Instead of collecting her, you ejected her, respected her, let her be her, wrote her a letter and she read it for resenting. Back to me, she won't go on with them. Fell victim to the prism of one. Come and kill them slow. Seeds don't grow by the farms, they are gentrified. Sent the lie to me, beliefs. The agnostic priests, optimistical paths, so predictable the rituals. Habitual laugh if it tickles you. Funny money meant for your bruh, if it interests you. Mom said it's for the French and you. Probably vous Francie, obviously. Probably just me. Feeling like cheese, surrounded by thieves, surrounded by the trees, planted by the rivers and the waters. Praise the daughters. Bought a grave for the father. Behave on no martyr, just ask Marty Kitty.
The underground conscious side will always be welcome to, for sure.
Yeah, because they'll maintain a certain level of quality.
Definitely. Well, here on African Rhythms next, we've got Elena Mills, who, of course, has an association with back in the 70s with Norman Connors. But this is a pretty hard-to-find solo album. Pretty amazing singer.
She was introduced by Harry Ray and Roy Goodman in the Moments. And, of course, this is all platinum, so she's swinging with... As our hero just entered the stage here, but she's swinging with Linda Jones, so you know she had to vocally be able to do some serious stroking, and she got a shot with her first album here, and Ray and Goodman actually did background vocals on it.
That's amazing. Well, we've got a special surprise here on Africa Rhythms because Mike is just heading out to the door to bring in our special guest, and that is the... That is a gentleman named Jason Hoover that we are doing the film on, which is, of course, coming up this October. We're going to be shooting some more footage. So in a sec, Jason's just going to come in the studio here, and we're going to, for the last part of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the gentleman, the local soul singer that we're making a film about. So in the meantime, I'm going to put on this Elena Mills track.
That's all I can give.
And that's Elena Mills. Pretty great track, Mike.
Not bad. You can tell from the Goodman and Ray influence there. It sounded like a Moments song, the way the arrangements flew out there like that. But all platinum was like that. You know, the musicians, the sound quality, we were just talking about that. You know, you can only expect so much from an all platinum album or a track because they had their house tigers. But voice always proves outright. Nothing wrong with her voice. I could see why Norman Connors wanted her.
Yeah, Elena Mills, one of a kind. Well, welcome to the studio, Jason Hoover.
Hey, you guys. It's so good to see you.
Well said, brother.
It really is something else to see two of my favorite men. I'm talking about David Love Jones. And my man, Mike, man, from Philly.
Yeah, Mike is back from Philly. I know you've heard some of our shows together from the 90s.
Yeah, I've still got them. I just listened to it before I left.
Some magic moments back in the 90s.
It was like salt and pepper. You guys were just mixing so beautifully. I mean, it blended like, you know, wow. You guys were very entertaining.
Aw. There was a competition going on and nobody knew.
Well, you should have seen when we went one-on-one with the 45s. Man, yeah.
No,
when Mike brought some back from New York, he was rocking them one at a time.
Okay, how am I doing? Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Stay near the mic.
Stay on that.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, we're working towards your film, finishing the film.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I sure can't wait for it to be finished.
Definitely. Well, we're going to be shooting again in October. So the Jason Hoover is basically the story of the local soul scene, because we're talking the 60s and then we're talking 70s, the 70s and the into 80s. The 80s. Yeah, you know. You know, so basically the overview was Jason moved here in 63 from Edmonton.
Yeah, 64.
64. And shortly after joined the Epics.
That was the greatest group in my life, man. I mean, it was like the love of my life, as people talk about their women or their man, you know. This band was the love of my life. It was everything that I didn't think I would ever get out here. Yeah. And I just left the band at Edmonton. We were like, you know, being told, you guys are fantastic, but you got to get your ass out of Edmonton, yeah, because it was a rock and roll city. Mm-hmm. And here we're doing R&B and jazz. There's only one station.
So the Vancouver scene was, what
it's
was it like?
I walked into the Vancouver scene and it just ate me up.
Why did they point you in Western?
Everybody tells me go to Vancouver, and other people are telling me go to Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I realized that Toronto had, you know, almost twice as many people as Vancouver. And I said to myself, well, you know, it's going to give me a better chance. Toronto's got all these stars, mm-hmm, and people lined up to go to work. And Vancouver's still looking for people. I said, I'm here. Mm. Let me have a chance.
Did you hear of anyone out in Toronto? Like, who was well-known then?
Oh, yeah. It was David Clayton Thomas and Tears.
Mm, Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Yes.
Yeah. And so out in Vancouver, did you go and see Little Daddy and the Bachelors when you
Well,
got
I had to. My cousin was the bass player, Wesley, who also moved on to Vancouver.
Right.
Wesley Henderson.
Right.
As you know, Jason Hoover's real name is Daryl Henderson. That they had to let Tommy go because they got Bobby. And Bobby was running around looking for somebody.
And Bobby who?
Taylor.
Indeed. Yeah, Bobby Taylor.
Turn tonight. I guess that I'll just go home with my thoughts on happiness.
That is the story of how Bobby Taylor got to come to Vancouver.
Well, it's like this. They were arguing with Tommy Milton. It was Tommy Milton's group, Little Daddy and the Bachelors. Tommy Chong was in the group, but he was also against...
Cheech and Chong, Tommy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. He was working on Cheech and Chong when they got Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Bobby came... And he says, yeah, there's no problem because I was born in Red Deer, Alberta.
Mm-hmm. I said, what? Red Deer, Alberta? Hold on a minute. You mean you don't have to be,
I can choose where the country I want to do. And he never did that.
Mm-hmm.
Got into a little trouble after going to Motown and discovering Jackson 5 and stuff like that. He then came back here and he got in a little bit of trouble. He went back down south to San Francisco, his home, and his parents, it was true. They did move from Red Deer, Alberta to San Francisco. About that, I know is that his parents moved, and he went to school here for a few years from Red Deer, Alberta because of his
dad's. And then he moved down to San Fran.
To San Francisco.
Yeah. But you haven't talked with him lately?
No, I haven't, but... I remember the last time I talked to him, I says, listen, you said you're going to help me get to Hong Kong. Are we real or what's going on? He says, Jason, things are fucked up. I can't.
Yeah. Bobby Taylor, but you know what, it would be nice for Bobby's story to be told too, because you know, for a guy to come from San Fran to Vancouver and then get signed to Motown and to bring Michael Jackson to Motown and to have two incredible soul albums on Motown. Plus, I mean, that's major Canadian history.
He produced four Jackson 5 albums.
Right. You know, he said he was part of, obviously he was part of the corporation. And obviously because of that, for ABC and I Want You Back and other tracks he said that he wrote, but ABC.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He did all right. He's still doing all right. But, the money doesn't go to him anymore. It goes to the tax man.
They were sending him money.
He showed me three $1,000 bills when he was in town for a while. He says, look, Jason, look. Wow, I've never even seen a Canadian $1,000 bill, man.
That's getting paid. Yes.
I used to
Let's go to not the epics period, your first period, mm-hmm. but let's now go to the second period, which was the post-epics, and that was your psychedelic period.
Trials of Jason Hoover, man. We hit all the rock festivals. I mean, we did everyone in
Uriah
Alberta,
Heep.
Everyone in Saskatchewan, all the ones in BC. It was really fantastic. And Winnipeg we did, too. That's when we got signed up, or I should say I got signed up to the agency and the management that ran the Guess Who. Mm-hmm. Burton Cummings and Jim Cale and I were good friends anyways before that because we had done shows together.
So you were well integrated in the rock scene for a while.
There you go. Yeah. I know them very well, especially in Toronto and Winnipeg. I know a lot of the rock people. It's really amazing how many groups all got one-hit wonders. You know, there was like so many one-hit wonders.
Yep.
And they fade away, just like I did. I mean, I had a couple of hits, actually.
No, you didn't fade away. You just didn't get played on the radio. That's a difference.
But what are your memories of the song, Words? I mean, to me, it's one of your best songs.
All right.
But how did it come about, or what can you tell me about?
Words, I loved it very much. It was Ken Wayne. Kenny Wayne was the keyboard player that took over for Stephen Cartnell.
He wrote it?
He wrote Words.
Oh, I see.
I had nothing to do with it outside of listen to it, and I said, you know, that's my song.
You liked it.
I loved it.
Right.
And he was really nervous playing to me and stuff because it was a little bit different than the stuff I was doing.
Yeah, it is different than your other stuff.
Yeah, so he really found it that would be great for me.
It's a good rock soul kind of track, so let's check it out.
Let's check it out. It's been a while.
They say you'll find your life's true aim by hearing what your palms may say. You'll see the answer to your joy lies very close at hand. So place yours very close to mine. We'll find our place in all the time. Till then we'll love together till the end of time is near. Yeah.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Is Cy Risby and Chuck Flintroy, Ain't Life Wonderful, Sixth Avenue Records, Jason. I mean, is that local or what?
It was very local. I want to say those guys were great. Especially
the Night Train Review.
Especially Cy Risby. I think that he was one of the finest entertainers that ever came out of Vancouver. Although the Night Train Review went on road, they were in the stateside, they were in Hawaii, they did everything, you know.
Yeah, and wasn't there an incantation of Night Train that you were in that went to Hawaii?
I took the group and I said, let's go and let's get things happening. Yeah. And Donnie Girard, who sang
Right, yeah. So he was in the Trials, but for a moment during the Trials period,
yeah,
you guys took off for an extended gig in Hawaii with the Night Train.
Three months, which was really a knockout. And when we left,
I've done my history.
He knows it really well. The Ala Moana Hotel, and it's now owned by Filipinos, but at that time it was owned by locals, you know. And they loved us, and they signed us for the 3 months. As soon as it got to 2 weeks before the 3 months was over, they offered us the very same contract again. They really liked us.
That must have been really fun times.
Yeah, hard to get a group over from the stateside, you know, to stay in Hawaii, and, you know. And they liked us. We were good people. We didn't have the police or the hotels telling on us that we were up late throwing bottles off the top. You know?
But here's the deal, though. But in a sense, though, that kind of put you back into the old R&B soul group kind of vibe of the 60s, right?
Exactly. We were like the Sons of Teflon, you know. I mean, we were in the middle of rock and roll, and we played also the funk and the R&B.
Depending on our race, there's no language barrier from
what were some of the things that kind of kept the Trials from going further, like releasing an album?
I'm going to tell you a story. This is really too much. Now, we got Steve Cartmell. He's playing keyboards. And then we took him from the Kentish Steel Group. Thought he was cool. So cool that we said, listen, the guy from Warner Brothers is coming out to see us in Toronto. And, you know, we're going to be really tired of coming back from Victoria playing, you know, we were playing one of the cities like Courtney or Campbell. We thought he was so cool that he would be able to handle it, Armada and I, because we were tired of going to all these phony people, you know.
Yeah.
This guy was not phony. He offered Steve Cartmell for our group, he said, 4.5 cents a record. Mm. I forgot to school Cartmell. He laughed at him. He laughed at the guy. 4.5 cents.
It wasn't good deals in those days.
Yeah, back in those days, it was really bad deals.
Yeah.
Unless you were Stevie Wonder or somebody. Your film is going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And also, we got a girl writing a book.
Yes.
Yeah. And those are two powerful things.
A book and a film is being made on Jason right now.
We're all right.
Yeah.
Most of the things that people have when they're keyboard players is time measure. Mm. If you don't have your time measure, you ain't got shit going on. Because people can't live always with the drummer that's on the beat, you know.
You're taking turns taking time, and that's the important thing. You have to have a basis where everything flows from the groove, whether it's the piano playing or the drums playing. Everything must be on time.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a good drummer, you don't have a good time. If you don't have a good time, you suck. That's just the way it is.
Mm. Chops are important. And when you look at everything that's been going on from the time you started to the Trials to now.
Mm.
The one thing that I talked with David with earlier is that, look, nothing matters more than the material. You can have the best PR people, the best production people, and all of that in the world. If you don't have original material, you're not going to work.
That's right.
You know, and it doesn't matter what decade either. Sade was proof of that in the 80s.
All praise to your son for trying, but let's face it, to reproduce your music is incredibly hard, as I'm sure he's found. You know what? It's still respect that he did it. Like, you know, that he loves you enough to reproduce it. But
there's too many people. There's too many people going for the same job as you want. I was very lucky. Not only did I have cut down the traffic, I had people that wanted me. They were knocking down doors, racing to get me.
It was different times back then. Yeah.
Imitation is not always flattery, you know? Yeah. It really isn't, because imitation means you're going to do it exactly like that, and there's no exactly like that.
There's no exactly like the way Jason did it.
Well, I'm really happy that finally people are understanding that I am a unique situation.
You have a very unique local situation, you know, and that's why it's so important to document in the film.
I remember when Bobby Taylor, when I told him about this documentary, I remember the look on his face and, you know, he's like looking at me.
Don't worry, we're coming to visit him now.
We got you, Mr. Taylor. We got you. You're next.
Canada's R&B, and he's actually a Canadian, so I just kept quiet, you know.
Well, you know, Bobby's legacy is next on our agenda, but we're going to get through your film first. But, you know, let's talk about another guy from the local scene situated in Victoria, Rael Johnson. Tell me about him.
Rael Johnson and I were, and Bobby used to come down, and Tommy used to come down. Both Tommies would come down to see us play at the Elegant Parlor, which was down underneath.
On Davie Street.
Davie Street, right.
Yeah. It's downstairs.
David, you got your backs together.
Yeah.
Yes. And we sang in that nightclub when Bobby Taylor and them would go to Chicago, go on a road trip or whatever. Mm. We would look after the club that was owned by Bobby. By not Bobby Taylor, but Tommy Chong.
Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Tommy Chong, I mean, credit to the man out there. That he played a epic part of the development of the R&B scene. You know, what he did and what he owned and what he ran and what bands he was in. He might not have been that great of a player himself, but regardless.
He wasn't that great. And honest to God, he wasn't that great, but he knew how to get feel. You know?
Yes.
He wouldn't put himself heavily into solos. He would give them to Eddie Patterson or the keyboard player Robbie King at the time.
Yeah.
And that was the Vancouver's.
Yeah, well, let's get back to this Rael Johnson. So the single we're going to listen to is recorded in Little Mountain Studios. Mm. So I would say probably the late 70s, early 80s.
You got that right.
Ray L. Johnson, so this guy was a friend of yours, mm-hmm. and the career spanned a similar period to yours. But did he come up from the States?
And all he told me he was from St. Louis.
So he came up here, and he changed his name slightly?
He changed his name from Alfonso Johnson to Ray L. Johnson.
All right, let's check him out now here
great.
On African Rhythms. the African Rhythms, and that is Local from Victoria, self-released, late 70s, early 80s. Some great stuff.
BC funk, y'all. I like
yeah,
that.
You know, like that's a self-release from Victoria, and that was Jason's buddy, Rael Johnson. So local history, you know.
It was some history.
Yeah.
He opened in Cabaret, which was right alongside of the phone building on Seymour Street, going north. And there was an after-hours club called the Inn Cabaret.
Never heard of that one.
He had to change the Inn because somebody else said, so he called it the Inn. Yeah. That was Rael. And Rael and my cousin were partners, and they owned this club. They paid cash. I was there when I saw hundreds coming out. And I couldn't believe all the hundreds that were coming out.
Yeah.
The question has to be asked. You were doing Ready, Go.
60s.
This is back in the 60s. Why did they not allow you to do original music?
Well, in those days, it was like you had to eat and pay your mortgage or eat and pay your rent, and you had to play James Brown, Wilson Pickett, Otis Redding. You had to have those in
Motown.
You.
Right, understood.
And all the Motown.
Right, no, understood. But there's two words they could have utilized that would have changed the whole game. If you were introduced as Canada's Own.
Wow, that was like not even in sight. It wasn't even in sight at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's almost like in the beginning, they were just, it was like, well, get our Canadian content in, getting Jason right. to sing the Motown songs, mm-hmm. you know. It didn't seem as respectful, but did you, I was thinking though, when you got your way to do a whole Let's Go show, where you hosted the whole show and you did all the songs.
Oh, you do that one too.
Yeah, but did you not ask for that? Or did you not say to them, look, man, I'm tired of doing these stupid covers?
No, what happened was he told me, listen, this is Mr. Gibson, who was the producer, Ken. And I said, Ken, sure, I'll do the show. I'd love to. He says, well, what we'd like you to do is come in and play all your songs to us, and we're going to knock off the ones that we don't think are...
You know, they don't like.
Yeah. Don't like. So we came and we put on a show for them, right, in the studio at CBC.
So you did a few covers of things you liked.
Oh, it's ready.
So you like funky Broadway.
Yeah, I hated funky Broadway, but I do it anyway.
You sure did a funky version of it. I don't know. I don't hate it.
Wilson's had the best. See, my voice was suited for Stax and Atlantic. That's right. Where I was shooting for.
Yeah.
When I got Cap Records, I was halfway in the door.
But, I mean, okay, getting back to when you did this whole show. So did you not get your way to some degree, or they were the ones who decided the songs? Size Mary Jimmy, Funky Broadway.
So they didn't, they didn't put King Size on.
I think maybe you did Gimme Some Loving.
Yeah, we did. His voice's too good, man.
Yeah. But I don't know. The Wind Cries Mary was kind of cool during that.
Nobody covered Hendrix, so that was exemplary on its own.
Yeah, not too many people can do that. Yeah. Now, Bud had a great guitar player.
Guitar solo was great.
He was good. He had the feel for it.
That was a good moment. That should have led to enough exposure for you to have got more Toronto Love or more, you know, stuff onto vinyl or an album or things like that.
You all have to get it lessons. We can't go through a career without having the downside for you to enjoy the upside.
It's the whole concept of programming that they saw and heard everything and heard a record that was already out locally and they cut it off.
Mm.
See, any other act, they would have let that through. If that had been Bachman.
American.
It would have been blasted.
Can
I be frank enough to say, you charmed them enough until you got to the point where somebody said, we don't want this guy Hoover to go any further.
That's right. That's exactly what happened. Now, I'm not going to mention the name. I know the person that you're talking about. It's amazing that you even came up with that. There's always that one guy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if you don't do as he wants, then he
can make or break you.
Make it hard for me.
Yeah.
I will make it very, very good for you. You can tell management to get a hold of me, and I'll smooth it through and you'll be fine.
So he said that verbatim, that he was like, see, now how's that for a midnight confession?
And he thought I was stupid enough. Mm-hmm.
So do we understand this then, Jason? Uh-huh. What does it feel like to be Canadian and to have gone through literally all these trials, just like you implied?
Yeah.
And knowing that Canadians were the ones that were doing most of the holding back in the process.
Isn't that something? Because I always thought it was Americans.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to tell you truthfully. Mm-hmm. When I was exposed finally to the Americans,
say we were like yourself. They're very, very excited about this because it's a unique situation. Okay, so some of the slaves, after the release of the slaves back, moved up to Canada.
Absolutely.
Work an acre, take an acre. That was really good to people. They realized.
You know what? They're doing it again now.
Isn't it?
History repeats itself.
Yeah, they're going north. So.
That's right.
Going north, young man.
They have to be.
All right, well, listen, we got to end it with that, but we're going to go out with We Are All People, your only record on an American label, Cap Records. Yeah. Tell me something about that.
Well, we didn't do the deal. Jack Kershaw did the deal.
One-off deal.
The deal was that if it was a hit, I had a 3-album deal, but that's what you call smart work. Yeah. They liked what they heard. That, you know, they didn't say, "Can you show me more?" Because we had it all there from Jack.
Let's face it, both sides of it were amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna do this again soon, my friend.
Yes, very soon, and I promise you, David, I will be here.
All right. Well, that's Mike and David, and special guest Jason Hoover, originally from the Epics,
and special guest in Mike.
Michael Ingram here from Philadelphia, but shortly to be back in Vancouver.
I'm so happy to have you.
Yeah. All right. Well,
good around this man.
Peace and love. You've been listening to African Rhythms Radio. Coming up is Skulls Hall. Peace and love to you guys.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching.